welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, welcome to Turn the Page. I'm your host, Ralph Gateau at the Syosset Public Library. Here today with Dr. Elsa Pancharoli, who is a paleontologist and who's just written a book called Beasts Before Us, The Untold Story of Mammal Origins and Evolution. Dr. Pancharoli, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great. So first thing, Beasts Before Us talks about, you see a lot of books, a lot of talk about dinosaurs and things, but this is about mammals. What made you interested to write a book about this?
It's kind of funny because when I became a student of paleontology, so it's the study of fossils and extinct life, I pretty much assumed I was going to study dinosaurs, right? Because, you know, that's what fossils are. They're dinosaurs. That's what we always think of. And it was really kind of serendipity. I ended up my project when I was doing my master's degree ended up being about mammals and about mammal fossils. And as I kind of pursued that, I ended up falling into this wonderful rabbit hole of the mammal fossil record and where we and other mammals come from, not just in the sort of recent times, but right the way back to the very beginning. And I really just kind of followed my nose and ended up discovering all of these amazing stories about mammal history and mammal fossils.
Interesting. I actually just kind of fell into it kind of.
Yeah.
So in your work, so is your work, when I think of a paleontologist, I think of, the pith helmet out in the field, looking for things, sort of like, my exposure would be something like in a mass media sense would be like a Jurassic Park, where, you know, you're going out, in the wild and searching for things. Is that kind of what you do? Is that maybe like 10% of what you do? How does that work?
Well, there are definitely some paleontologists who do that. It's not completely and utterly, you know, all these stereotypes, they always have some kind of fact, But I think, for me personally, I would really love to spend a lot more time out in the field. But to be honest, if I'm lucky, I get out maybe 2 or 3 weeks in a whole year. Okay. And the rest of the time, I'm in front of my desk or I'm gathering data, and that's usually with CT scanners or similar things like that, or visiting museums and just basically looking at specimens and writing about them. So predominantly, actually, I'm sitting in front of my desk at a computer. It's an office job 99% of the time. But as I say, I do go into the field and I would love to spend a lot more time. I spend a lot of my time when I am out of the office, going to the Isle of Skye in Scotland and also to South Africa where I have colleagues. And again, some of the stereotypes are true. Yes, you know, you have to wear a sun hat and sunglasses and tough clothing, but there's a lot more, of course, women and people of color, and it's a lot more sort of, it's a lot more diverse now, I think, than it really used to be. Although there's still a ways to go. But it's great fun, of course, being out and looking for fossils.
My first career choice ever. I wanted to do that. When I was I'm always kind of curious. I've actually spoken to a live paleontologist, so it's like, ooh, you know, not in a museum format or a lecture or something like that, but interesting. I'm up there, but maybe I could try for it someday.
Well, of course, when people dream about it, they don't dream about sitting in front of a computer.
No. They pick this, on some gorge somewhere, like, you know, chiseling at stone, trying to find something and making the next great discovery. And
absolutely.
We've made some incredible discoveries, though. I mean, just I was referencing when we spoke earlier about a BBC report about how you stumbled upon a very large bone while just out in the field in Scotland. What was that about?
It's true. It was, again, complete luck. Partly luck. We were in a place where we knew that there were rocks from the middle of the Jurassic, obviously, you know, famous for dinosaurs, but also famous for lots of other animals, including very ancient mammals, which is what I was interested in finding. And we were walking along a beach exposure. So a lot of the time we look on beaches and cliffs and shorelines because, of course, the water is eroding the rock and removing layers and hopefully, fingers crossed, exposing fossils. And we hadn't been very successful, to be honest. We hadn't found very much. And I have a tendency to wander off on these sort of field trips. So I'd gotten quite far away from the rest of the group. So I turned and was basically kind of jogging along the shore, jumping from rock to rock, you know, to get back to the team. And I just suddenly realized I had stood on something that looked completely different, a big long black thing. So I turned around, went back to look, and sure enough, it was a huge bone. It turned out to be a leg bone from a dinosaur, one of the lower leg bones. We know it's some kind of stegosaur-like dinosaur, that kind of group, so a big plant eater. But it was quite badly eroded, so it's hard to say exactly which one, and we don't know what species or anything. But it was quite a cool thing to find, and the first one to be found on that island. It's a small island called the Isle of Egg, which is just off the coast of Scotland.
Are there a lot of discoveries? Have there been a lot of discoveries made in that area? I always think of dinosaur finds as being mostly like China or Africa, some in Central America. I'm sure there are, but I've never heard that many in Scotland or in the UK in general.
Yeah, Scotland doesn't really have that many dinosaur fossils. We've got quite a few footprints, and we have bits and pieces of dinosaurs, so mostly like individual bits of bone and stuff, but no whole skeletons, nothing really globally that impressive, except that they come from the Middle Jurassic. So there's not actually, globally speaking, that many fossils of dinosaurs from the very middle of the Jurassic. It tends to be more from the end of the Jurassic. Okay. So they're significant in that regard, but of course, compared to the kind of complete skeletons you get from places like China, the Gobi Desert, North America, they're humble. It's a humble fossil record we have, but it's lovely to find anything like that, especially when you come from Scotland. It's very exciting to find something like that on your doorstep.
It's actually on one of my list of countries I must visit. I was in England for the first time 2 years ago, and I said to myself, I'll be back, but I want to go up north. I want to see Edinburgh. I want to see these cities, and the landscape is so breathtaking. Geek moment, but when I was a kid, I was one of my favorite movies was Highlander, which part of Ireland. I love that movie, and in the scene, I'm like, that place exists. That's real. Wow, that's amazing looking, and
As soon as travel opens back up again, you have to get to Scotland. Yeah. It's just a wonderful place to visit.
Several of my coworkers have been there and they've raved about it, so I'm next. So your book Beasts Before Us talks about mammal origins and evolution and the untold story. Why do you think up to this point it hasn't been told? You think it's just something that people just overlook, or they just, you mentioned in the introduction how people kind of just gloss over it, like they jump maybe straight to Lucy or to the progenitors of mankind in Africa, but they kind of skip that our ancestors lived alongside dinosaurs and that era. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think if you ask most people where did mammals come from, they're generally speaking going to think that it was after that big asteroid impact that wiped out all the non-bird dinosaurs. And people have been told for a long time that really until that happened, there were no mammals, or if there were any, they were just tiny, not very significant. And for a long time, we thought that was true, and it's because we didn't find very many of their fossils. And what we did find were just bits and pieces, a jaw here, a tooth there, virtually nothing. And they're all tiny and kind of just a bit boring, to be honest. Okay. I think the reason that I said it's an untold story is because really in the last sort of 20 years, that whole picture has totally changed. Mm-hmm. So we now know that in the time of dinosaurs, yes, most mammals were relatively small, but there were some that were like the size of pit bulls. So, proper big, chunky sort of dog-sized animals, size of a raccoon maybe, it would be a sort of North American equivalent. Mm-hmm. And some of those animals were even eating baby dinosaurs. So, this is like food webs turned on their head, what you would expect. And these animals were doing all the things that you would expect a small mammal to do in the modern world. So we've got mole-like diggers, we've got climbers in the trees, specialist swimmers like beavers. And all of this was going on like way, way before when there were dinosaurs. But also in the book, I take you back even further than that, because that time of the dinosaurs, mammals, they looked like we would expect a mammal to look. They were furry, they fed their young on milk, they at some point started to give birth to live young, but actually their evolution stretches back way further than that, And before the dinosaurs even existed, it was the mammal ancestors who were the dominant animals on our planet, including huge mega herbivores with like big horns coming out their faces and carnivores with saber teeth. All of this was taking place before dinosaurs existed, right back at the beginning. And I think very, very few people know about those animals. So it's what I wanted to showcase. I wanted to tell everyone about this stuff that I think a lot of people just haven't heard about.
You know, yeah, until you just told me that, I didn't know that either. You know, like you said, the common narrative is, and the Earth formed, and the dinosaurs came, they tromped around, they did a lot of interesting things, asteroid hit, you're the mammals, and then that's the Mesopotamia, and that's it. It's kind of like sometimes a bridge version of what I've heard.
Wow. Absolutely. I mean, when I was a student, I found out all this stuff for the first time. You know, this one last sort of decade, you know, that I've been learning. I just couldn't believe it. I was really shocked because I'd never heard any of this stuff before. Right. And it's kind of, you know, it's relatively well known amongst paleontologists. Mm-hmm. But I mean, they're specialists. Of course, they know about this stuff. But for most of us, you know, we don't hear these stories. So, yeah, that's why I wanted to tell people.
Right. And how did... I guess, obviously, we found it through the fossil record. How do you even, what in the fossil tells you that this, the owner of this bone was a mammal? Is there certain, is it a DNA check? Is it a, how do you know? And you find a bone, how do you know if this is a mammal or a dinosaur? Can you know just by, you have to wait to get to the lab, or can you know just by examining something on it? Or how would that happen?
It varies. So mm-hmm. most of the stuff that we can tell about extinct animals is in their bones. And they have certain characteristics. Some certain groups have characteristics that other groups don't have. Mm-hmm. Now for mammals, an awful lot of the information is actually in their teeth. Okay. So really early on, mammals start to get very complicated teeth. Mm-hmm. And they start to have, like we have, you know, incisors at the front. Mm-hmm. We have canines that are pointed. And of course, if you're a cat, you have even more pointed canines. And we have these teeth for like grinding stuff and processing stuff at the back. But if you look in the mouth of a reptile, a crocodile, for example, mm-hmm. they don't have that. And neither did the dinosaurs. They just have pointy teeth all the way along or whatever shape it is. It's all the same. So for mammals, their teeth are so different and so complex because they're able to eat all of these different types of foods. And it's very, very significant for them. So we can actually tell if something is a mammal literally from finding a single tooth, because we know that only a mammal could have a tooth like that and a reptile wouldn't. So you can tell an awful lot from a tiny amount of information. Mm. When it comes to limb bones, similar kinds of things, you know, the structure of the bone inside, there's always these little markers that just differentiate a mammal from a reptile or an amphibian or whatever other group it is. So yeah, I mean, we really don't need all that much to be able to tell an awful lot about an animal. It's quite surprising.
You mentioned earlier that you had all these large creatures before the dinosaurs. So did they existed before the dinosaurs and alongside them as well? Or was it more of a sort of a decline maybe we see in the record, a bit of the rise of that? Well, like, the two weren't mutually exclusive, I take it. They coexisted together.
Well, it's really funny, actually. This is one of these crazy patterns in the fossil record. So I guess let's go back to just before that point, right? I think a lot of people, the story that we used to be told as well was that mammals evolved from a type of reptile.
Right.
But this is another thing that's actually not correct. And we now know that mammals and reptiles, they did have a common ancestor. So they share a relative, but that relative, it wasn't a reptile or a mammal. It was something else. It was a thing before either of those groups existed. Mm-hmm. So that's way back at the dawn of life coming out onto land. There's this really fundamental split between the groups. And it was basically like the mammals, the ancestors of mammals, that took off first. And they turned into these big creatures that I was telling you about. So those things, they ruled the earth for like, you know, 150, 200 million years. They did amazing stuff. Mm-hmm. But then there was a huge mass extinction. Okay. And it was way bigger than the mass extinction that wiped out the dinosaurs. This thing killed about 3/4 of all life on Earth. And it basically wiped out a lot of these big animals. And then this time around, it was the reptiles that got off the mark first. Mm. And this is the kind of pattern that we see looking at fossils, is that we see these great big extinctions, and it's kind of luck as to which group manages to make it first. Mm-hmm. The first time around it was mammals, but the second time around it was reptiles. Mm. And then the last time it was mammals again. And that's why we live in this age of mammals. Who knows if there's another mass extinction? Maybe it'll be reptiles that will, or who, oh, maybe amphibians. Maybe we'll have a age of giant amphibians. Who knows?
There is lizard men, so they're around. So,
so those great big, ancestors of mammals, they did get wiped out. And it was a lot of the kind of smaller groups that lived alongside dinosaurs. And then, of course, ended up leading to the mammals that we recognize today.
Do we know what caused the mass extinction of mammals at that time?
Yeah, volcanic eruptions in what's now Siberia. So there were these massive, what they call trap eruptions, which is when it's like floods and floods of lava that just cover the land. But they also, of course, erupt lots of gases. So it was basically climate change, but on a scale kind of beyond anything that life had seen before. I remember one of the things I read said that the climate got so hot that the sea around the equator was about as hot as a bathtub. If you got into your evening bubble bath, that was basically how hot the sea was. It was that hot. So this is not a very good good climate for life to survive.
Okay. And how about sea mammal life? Would they be alongside that also? Do we know that? Go ahead.
No, so the reptiles were the first ones to go back from land into sea. So we don't see mammals doing that until the last 50, 60 million years after the dinosaurs became extinct. That's when we get the ancestors of whales and dolphins.
And when you're talking about the first group of, the first reign of mammals, about how far back is that? The initial group, the one that had the large creatures right before the dinosaurs.
So that's over 250 million years ago. So this is, and dinosaurs, for context, they appeared about 200 million years ago. So it was more than 50 million years before there was any dinosaurs that the mammals had. What I kind of, in my book, I call the first age of mammals. Although, of course, you could quibble because I guess technically they're not quite mammals as we think of them. They're this kind of strange before, like proto-mammal. They possibly had fur. We don't really know. They probably didn't have ears, like external ear flaps like we have. So they would have been something strange. I mean, you would just, if you saw one, you probably not really know quite where to put it. You know, it would have looked like nothing that we have on Earth today, basically.
Have they made any sort of, like, I'm sure, are there artist interpretations of that? Can someone go see them, like, in a website or somewhere to see, like, what these maybe have looked like?
Yeah. Oh, if you want to have a look at them, there's some amazing looking ones. If you Google therapsids is what they call them, therapsids. So if you Google that, you will see some amazing stuff. One of my favorite ones is an animal called Estemonosuchus. Mm-hmm. And this thing was found in Russia. And I describe it in my book as looking as if a firework had gone off in its skull. Because it has these crazy horns that actually stick out of its cheeks, like antlers that come out of the cheeks and they come out of its head as if something had just exploded in the center of its face. And it was about 3 meters long. So this is like as long as a car, longer than a car. It's this gigantic animal, big herbivore. I mean, creatures like this were, these are the ancestors of mammals. And they would have just looked like nothing you can imagine. Crazy looking creatures.
Wow. When they say truth is stranger than fiction, and it always seems to be that way because it's something from a science fiction novel or something.
You couldn't make it up.
No, you couldn't. Great. So is Beast Before Us your first book? Have you written before this?
This is my first book. I've been writing since I was a kid, and I've tried my hand at writing books before, but never really all that seriously. You know, everybody thinks they have a book in them, and you know, I flirted with it, but this is the first one that is a proper serious book. But I have a second one already in the pipeline coming out next year. So maybe if you're interested, I could always come back and talk a bit about that.
I would like that, yes. I have to say, first of all, congratulations on finishing on writing this one and going to your second one. And this one also, it's a very delicate trick to make some things very, read almost like a story, like an adventure novel. Like, it's sometimes you have all these, I'm sure you have all these facts and things that, you know, you're trying to explain to a lay audience, to take all that information and kind of like make into a narrative, it's no easy task. And I compliment to you because I was, again, I've only gotten maybe into like maybe the first introduction, first chapter, and I will finish it. And it's very readable. It goes like this. It really, and at the same time, it's hitting you with all these different things. And based on what some of the things you've told me too, I'm definitely interested to read more. I would encourage everybody listening to definitely pick it up. We will have it, no doubt, once it comes out in the United States. How did you find like getting all that information to sort of a narrative sense? Did you find it very difficult? Did it come not too bad for you, or how was that process?
It's hard to answer that because I don't want to make it seem like it was a really easy thing, but it somehow just did end up falling into place. Like, I think beforehand, when you try to imagine, oh my God, how am I going to do this? You can't imagine how you're going to do it. But then as you start to write and as you start to think, oh, I will definitely want to mention this and I want to mention that, I would find these moments where suddenly it just made sense, this linked with this. And I could just, you know, it kind of just happened. It falls into place.
Okay.
And I knew that there were certain things that I definitely had to get in there. Obviously, the story of the animals that we were just talking about. Mm. But there's also some amazing people that I really wanted to bring in. So I talk about one of my real heroines of paleontology, this a Polish paleontologist called Zofia Kielan-Jaworowska. And she was the first woman to sort of lead an expedition to look for dinosaurs and other fossils in the Gobi Desert. Okay. And she was a real pioneer in what she did. You know, she was in some ways that kind of stereotypical, really tough sort of outdoorsy type who goes into the Gobi Desert and withstands all these harsh conditions. But she was also really wonderful sort of collaborator. She brought people into her projects and she fostered talent in Mongolia itself and was incredibly generous with her time and her expertise. You know, a really interesting person. And her background is that she grew up during the Second World War and was actually in the Polish resistance fighting the Nazis. Mm-hmm. But the whole time she was carrying a paleontology textbook around in her backpack. And whenever she had a down moment between, like, you know, helping a resistance soldier or so on, she would take out her textbook and she would read about fossils and dream about studying fossils when the war ended. Mm-hmm. And then she did it. So, I mean, what an inspiring person. And I do try to bring in people like that as well throughout the book, because I think we all need to have, you know, some heroes and heroines to look up to as well. And I think she's a particularly suitable person to admire.
It's a story. It's called Hollywood about that. That needs to be made. That movie needs to be made. I'd watch it. Nazi fighting paleontologist. All right. Sign me up. I'll take it for sure.
But I also don't shy away from some of the unpleasant stories as well. So, I have sections where I talk about, obviously, you know, paleontology, like geology and lots of other sciences. Mm-hmm. It's very tied into colonialism. There's a lot of very unpleasant stories. Mm-hmm. And I do bring them into the book as well and kind of face up to that stuff, because I think we've got to look kind of critically and evaluate, you know, the history of some of these objects and where they come from and how they were acquired. Because a lot of them were kind of stolen from the countries that they come from. Right. So that's in there too. Okay. A little bit of the good and the bad.
Yeah, I think there was a comedian I listened to that, I forget his name, but he does a whole routine about that, how the, you know, British Museum, they got all these different artifacts from different countries. And it's like, we'd like to have those back, please. They're like, no, no, you can come look at them. You can't have them back, no.
Exactly. So, and it's a major issue, you know, right, that we're kind of grappling with. And what are museums even for now? Who are they for?
Right.
We have to ask ourselves these questions as researchers as well. Because some of the stuff that we work on, it was obtained in really unpleasant ways. So, you know, we have to kind of reflect on that and think about, you know, the stories we want to tell about it and the ethics behind it.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Panciaroli. I want to ask you, if someone wanted to look up something more about you or just your work and what you're doing, where can we find you online or lectures, things like that, if you want to listen?
Well, yeah, you can definitely, I think if you Google my name, you'll find, I've given quite a lot of public talks and a few of them are on YouTube. Okay. And I have to admit that I distract myself quite frequently from work by being on Twitter. So if you wanted to find me on Twitter, I am on there far too much.
Okay. Yeah. Me and you both. Definitely. Okay. Pancharoli, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. It was great talking to you. I found this really interesting. And again, I encourage everybody to either go to your bookstore or come to the library to get this book. It's Beast Before Us. And it's the untold story of the of mammal origins and evolution. Dr. Pancharoli, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.